Possible with support from Verde Gallery and Verdant News and Coffee, a place of inspirations where community and culture converge. Fine art, great coffee, news from home and abroad, located at 17 East Taylor Street in downtown Champaign.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's the first Friday of the month, the day we talk about dogs. Our guest today is dog trainer Jan Fennell. Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana will return next month in March. Our guest this afternoon, Jan Fennell, lives in England, where she's done a great deal of work with damaged and delinquent dogs. She has quite a following, and her fans have nicknamed her the Dog Whisperer. Listeners, I invite your questions about dogs for our guest, Jan Fennell. Here are the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Outside the Champaign-Urbana area, you can call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Jan Fennell is the author of the dog training guide, The Dog Listener, Learn How to Communicate with Your Dog for Willing Cooperation. The book is published by Quill, an imprint of HarperCollins, and it features a foreword by the horse whisperer, Monty Roberts. Jan Fennell is in the U.S. on a book tour on Monday, the 9th of February. She'll be at Borders Books in LaGrange for a talk and book signing. That's set for 7:30 p.m. And on Tuesday, the 10th, she'll be at Anderson's Books in Naperville. The Anderson's event begins at 7 p.m. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Jan Fennell, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, hello. Good afternoon, Celeste. It's lovely to be with you.
Oh, it's so nice to talk with you. When you began working with dogs, breeding and showing them, you did well, but you weren't satisfied.
That's right.
You wanted a more humane training process. How were you training your dogs at the time?
Well, I was doing traditional. You only know what you've been shown. Obedience training I was doing, making the dog come when I called, sit as I asked. Using the absolute traditional method of controlling the dog's behavior. And I was pretty good at it, too. I really was. But there was something in the back of my mind that was very uncomfortable, because by obedience training, by getting the dog to under control, I was actually being quite forceful. It's not my nature to force any being to do anything. And although, as I say, I was pretty good at it, I wasn't violent, far from it, but I used a check chain and went a traditional route. But as I say, I just felt the dogs were not doing it because they wanted to. And you mentioned Monty Roberts, my very dear friend now. He came to England in 1989. He was invited by our Queen to come and show us how to work with horses. And when I saw him for the first time, I've got to be honest, I didn't quite believe it was that simple, that straightforward. I thought they must be partially trained or whatever. But I quickly came to realize that there was no tricks, no stunts. This was genuine. And I saw him take a young, unbacked horse and get it to have a saddle, bridle, and the rider on, the horse being calm, happy, relaxed, and do it all in half an hour. Something that usually took weeks. And I was amazed. So his words, no fear, no pain, get the animal to choose you leader of its own free will, invite that animal to cooperate. These were words I was waiting for. And he said, when the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear. And I was so ready for this kind, gentle communication. But of course, the dog is not the horse.
Right.
And whilst he had learnt from the Mustangs in Nevada, been watching them, I realised I had to go to the canine's wild relatives, which included, of course, the wolf, coyotes, African wild dogs, dingoes, any group livers of the canine species I started to watch and learn from. And it was tough to begin with because I still got hung up on things like, you know, a dog that wouldn't cooperate with you I saw as being willful. Or, you know, there were some bad dogs, dogs that bit, dogs that, you know, chase people. And, you know, all these things, dogs that steal food from the table. You know, all these things I was convinced, like everybody else was, that this was possible. And it all fell away because the more I studied them, the more, first, the big revelation was that there was absolutely minimal aggression within a wolf pack. There is, in fact, an immensely gentle, family, caring, loyal being. And there they were. They were showing me that the cooperation was willing.
Mm.
How did they do it?
Mm.
As I studied more, I found that only four things actually really matter to the canine. First, food. Absolute priority. Yeah. If you eat, you live.
Mm.
The second thing was how we get that food. And we call that going for a walk. Well, they don't. It's going on the hunt. Very important. If you hunt well, you will eat. Third, is the pack in any danger? Is there a threat to the pack that must be dealt with very, very firmly? And finally, where the dog, the individual dogs, fitted in that pack to make those other three things possible. And when they've eaten well and they are not afraid, they are inveterate game players. Dogs play. They don't go for route marches. They want to really have a good time. And so, as I started watching this, I noticed how the alpha pair, the bosses of all the canine packs, conduct themselves, and it's with a regal confidence. They're the smartest. They're the biggest, the boldest. They're also the most intelligent. They show leadership qualities, and they do this with very, very little aggression. It's nearly all done with confidence, and it's calm, a quiet confidence. This made me question everything I've ever done, because traditionally, if my dog, say, barked at the door when people came, it would be, stop it, be quiet, get over. Well, as I watched these wolves, I was thinking, they won't behave like that. And I realized, as a pack animal, if you're saying, stop it, be quiet, then you're actually saying they don't hear the words because they don't understand the words. Mm-hmm. What they hear is, go get them.
Sounds like you're barking.
Yeah, it sounds like you're joining, ginning them up.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, would a leader behave like that? I think not.
Mm.
So I tried something really, really drastic. And I was, when they barked, good dog, thank you. And to my amazement, they would take that.
Mm.
Become quiet very quickly. Happy too, because I was listening to them. I was paying them respect and appreciating. They can hear better than me, so terrific. Keep it coming. Another time I found that the mistakes were being made was when food. I often hear people say, my dog's a poor eater. I leave food down all the time. Well, this isn't a real word for them either. If I explain that with the African wild dog, from when the second a gazelle, a Thompson gazelle, is their favorite food, when they bring one down, from being brought down to absolutely nothing left is approximately 5 minutes. And this is, of course, because they're not the only predators out there. There are lions, hyenas, all ready to come along, and leopards, all ready keen to come along and take their kill. So if that was a fact, then leaving the food down is like giving them permanent access to the means of survival. Why on earth should they listen to you? And slowly I began to work on just taking charge of these important times with the dog. Mm. And realizing where they were coming from. And the more I tried it, the more success I had, the more my dogs, the key thing is they relaxed. No, instead of a dog being perceived as being happy when it runs around like a, you know, headless chicken, hi, you know, wait, free and friendly, that isn't a friendly dog. That's a dog that's panicking. It's like, don't hurt me, I'm a good dog, really, I'm not going to hurt you. And, you know, things started to make a lot of sense, and over the years, I've just kept on going, learning more, and refining it, and helping people, and as you said, delinquent dogs are something we can deal with very successfully, but to my joy, people are finding if they use this method on puppies, and on, you know, fresh dogs from a shelter, they also have immense problems usually, then their lives with their dogs is peaceful, harmonious, and there's a lot of understanding.
Mm. We have a couple of listeners wanting to talk with you this afternoon, so let's go to the phones. First, we're going to talk with a listener in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Hi there. Is this me?
Yep, that's
Hi.
You.
We have a golden retriever who's two, and she's just a doll. And my husband's most curious about this, and I am too, but she does this sort of thing. It's almost like she purrs. And I know we have a couple books on golden retrievers, and they don't talk, they talk about them, and they describe them as being quiet dogs, or, you know, dogs that don't bark. But, she purrs, and she has a high-pitched little sound in her voice. But could you, I'll hang up, and if you could just describe to me what that is. That sort of, she has a real low tone, and it's especially when she's happy or when she wants me to do something. I'll hang up. Thanks.
Right, that's a very good one, because I noticed there that your listener said, when she wanted me to do something.
Mm-hmm.
This is one smart dog. She has learned the most direct and easy way to get what she wants. Now, there's a huge problem, because if the dog can manipulate you into getting something, say it goes to the cupboard, looks at the cupboard, oh, you're ready for your dinner now? Get the food out. Or it goes to the leash and looks, you know, or if it just wants to play. If it can manipulate you, then it is actually the leader. You are not. Because the leader would not be pushed around like this. Now, first of all, don't think for 1 minute I'm saying don't play with your dog. Don't do anything. Of course you do. But think about it this way. If you are the leader, then you make the decision. So whatever little trick she's come up with, and, you know, what a smart dog. She's learned if she makes this particular sound, because their vocal sounds, they have a very definite calls, whimpers, howls, etc., that can mean as much joy as sadness. And all she's done is tapped into this particular sound and made it her own to get what she wants. My question with that is that really good for the dog? I think not. If the dog whines for you to give it something, you should actually walk away. Doesn't mean to say later on you can't call the dog to you and then give the dog whatever.
Mm.
But if you can let the dog push you around, then it takes over as leader. And nothing you do in the future will ever get that dog to believe in you until you start taking charge.
Mm. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana, line two. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I've already learned some things that I'm going to put to use with my dog. I have adopted a miniature dachshund from the local shelter, and she's about 8 years old. She's a wonderful dog, but she has one behavior that we're interested in knowing more about and seeing what we can do to help her with this, and that is she licks the floor. She will lick your arms, your legs, but she'll lick the floor. It seems to be a self-soothing sort of a thing, especially when she's going to bed at night. She usually has to sleep with one, either myself or one of the family members, and she will get in your bed, she'll lick your arms, your legs, she'll lick the bedspread for a moment, and then she'll quiet down and go to sleep. But she also does this during the day. If you're in the kitchen and she's with you, she'll lick the floor for a few minutes until you give her a bed or something to get into. I'll hang up and listen to your thoughts on this, what you think it might be associated with, and anything we can do to help manage this behavior. Thank you very much for the program and for your comments.
Thank you once again for that call. Oh boy, these dogs smart. The first caller's dog whined to get what she wanted. This little one licks the floor until you give her bed. They learn all sorts of little subtleties. Anything that works will do. Now, you have three issues here. One, you have a rescue dog. The thing with a rescue dog is somewhere in its life, it has had a raw deal. It's had a bad do. And up comes this loving home, which is obvious. This lady I picked up on saying, we want the best for her. Yeah, of course you do. Now, if this little dog has been through a bad time, comes to your home in your care, it is a warm, comfortable home, it's got food, it's obvious that you really do love this dog. It wants to do the job you give it to the best of its ability because it doesn't want to be sent away. It wants to stay with you. So it will work harder. We actually call rescue dogs 150% dogs because they're going to try harder. this an 8-year-old dog. The bad news is it's probably been doing this a long time, but the good news is that adopting my method, the age does not matter because I am working with the nature of the dog and I am using the dog's own language. So, in fact, I'm not teaching the dog anything at all. It all knows all of this. So, when your little dog starts his licking, and even of your arms, they're very tactile. They'd like to be close. But this has become an obsession. And it actually kicks in the dog's natural endorphins. So the little bit of stress she's struggling with is eased by the licking. When if you marry this up with addressing every issue, like when you, the hardest one, when you come in from, if it's, you've been in the bathroom, a separation with the dog, when you've been outside, when you come home, if you kneel down and say, "Hello, darling," what you're doing is, I fall at your feet, Your Majesty. Before I come into your home, I must grovel to you. That means you're giving the dog the job of leader, which it cannot cope with in our society, in our world. So instead of coming home, this is the toughest on a human being. Come in through that door, ignore the dog completely. If the dog is leaping around, wait. Take no action at all. And when the dog calms right down, wait about 5 minutes. And when it's really calm, then you can turn, look at your dog and say, "Come on, sweetheart, come for a cuddle." The reason I say do it then is the dog has decided to control its own behavior. The best control is self-control. If you start doing that as well as when the dog barks, praise the dog, don't leave food down, I would like this particular lady to add something else. When the dog starts this furious licking, to if it take hold of the dog very gently by the collar, I mean, if you put a collar on, I don't mean to scruff the neck because there's no pain in anything I do, and just ease the dog away and hold it at a distance from you. You do not speak. You certainly do not get upset. As I say, no violence. Your pulse rate stays down. And you wait until the dog, you feel it, relax. Then you let it go. If it returns to what it does, you, once again, take hold and move it to one side. What we're doing by doing this is showing the dog is like us, what is in this for me? And if you show the dog actually nothing, the dog will stop the undesirable behavior. And it is only, it is a stress reaction, licking. I have dogs that have licked floors, walls. I've had them that pounded on the floor. I've had them that chewed their feet up. It is a stress-related thing. You can bring the dog a lot of peace by just holding the dog till the panic subsides and letting it go. Every time it does it, the dog soon learns the consequences of actions and will stop doing it.
And also in what you're saying, I hear you talking about indirectly the two C's. Calmness and consistency.
And we can add also convincing.
Convincing.
Yeah, because you see, the leader, if you've ever got an opportunity, watch anything on wolves, coyotes, African wild dogs, the leaders are so convincing. They just ooze quality. And the others look at that and go, "Yeah, I want to be in your gang." And it's a very, very safe feeling. Anybody that works for a really good employer, they know what it's like. If that employer shows you respect, rewards you for your labors, and is nice to you, you're likely to stay with them. But if you work for somebody who says, "You don't want the job, there's plenty more out there to do," give you poor wages and treat you with very, very in a bad way, you're looking for another job. So if you create an environment where the dog goes, "I want to be here with you," I will. Then the dog instinctively will want to cooperate with you. Mm. It's that instinctive. And as I said at the beginning, this program that I've come up with is about working with the dog's nature. I never, ever fight it. Always cash in on everything the dog wants to do. Yeah.
So in essence, we're training ourselves and we're working with the dog and trying to see the world from where the dog sees it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we do courses at home, and now people are coming from literally around the world, I mean from New Zealand, everywhere, to be with us. And one of the most essential pieces of equipment we have in the home is tissues, a box of Kleenex, because what happens is people get very remorseful because they're sad at the way they have treated dogs in the past. And I'm not judgmental of that, because anybody that reads my book will realize that I start off with the most monumental mistakes. Mm. I had a dog that, because everybody put pressure on me, and this little dog did push my son through a glass window, And then she nipped my daughter. I had her put to sleep. So, I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit here saying to you, oh, I've always done it right, everybody else is wrong. I know the mistakes that can be made. But the other thing is, if you enforce your will on another, you get one of three reactions. You either get compliance, yeah, anything for a quiet life. Then the second thing you get is fear. Please don't hurt me. And anybody seeing fear in a dog's eyes, we've all seen it. You know, so don't hurt me, I'll do it. The third group are those that go, oh, yeah, you want to take me on? I think I'll come back at you. Now, if a dog does that, it's put down. Because we are doing something which is actually bullying. And our nations have just pulled together to do away with tyranny. And so, for me, it seems amazing that we not only accept it in our countries, we accept it in our own homes. Because a dog is terrorized by being forced.
Jan Fennell is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. It's the first Friday of the month, the day we talk about dogs. And Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, they'll be back in March next month. Jan Fennell, our guest this afternoon, is the author of the dog training guide, The Dog Listener, Learn How to Communicate with Your Dog for Willing Cooperation. Listeners, you can join us with questions, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And let me mention a couple of events coming up next week. On Monday, the 9th of February, our guest Jan Fennell will be at Borders Books in LaGrange, Illinois for a talk and book signing. That's set for 7:30 in the evening. And on Tuesday evening, the 10th, she'll be at Anderson's Books in Naperville. That event begins at 7 p.m. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Early in this book, you say, in many instances, our concept of the dog's role and the dog's idea of its place are completely at odds with each other.
That's right.
And then, in a little while later in the book, you talk about one of your dogs, Sasha.
Yeah.
And you have kind of a eureka moment where, you know, you've what's going on here? You're trying to get at what? Why is she doing what she's doing? Mm-hmm. And you wondered, gee, is she trying to take care of me?
That's right. Yeah, you see, it was in a eureka moment. That dog taught me so much. When I say, was she trying to take care of me? If I tell you, I just give you a clue of how I see this, how it came about. When I studied the work of the CNI dog, you know, guide dog, I discovered that this all started quite by accident back in a place called Potsdam in Germany, where a doctor was working with veterans from the First World War, and he noticed quite by chance that when people, the chaps who had been blinded by the mustard gas and whatever, were out on his patio, which was a very big one, there were steps down to the grass area, and his own German shepherd, without any training, and only with a blind gentleman, was coming across and stopping them from going and falling down those steps. So who was looking after who? There was an instinctive protection. And with Sasha, she would put herself between me and danger. And this, some people have said to me, and quite understandably, well, what's wrong with that? The danger with that is the dog is then making the decision.
Mm.
Now, let's have a for instance when you are out with your dog and your dog perceives danger. You might think it's not a dangerous situation at all, but the dog thinks it is. And the dog could actually attack that danger. Now, supposing that was somebody jogging past. The dog was not going to listen to you because you're not leader. You're the baby to be protected. And at that moment when an important decision had to be made, the dog would make it. And if the dog were to bite somebody because it truly believed that its baby, its precious baby, was in danger, then the dog would pay the price because somebody would say that dog's got to be put to sleep. So this is the worry for me that, you know, there she was trying to protect me, which was obvious, and I just couldn't let her do this. Doesn't mean to say that if I'm out with my dogs and somebody were to cause me distress and I were to be wound up a bit by this, then they would stand by me. but they would look to me for the ultimate decision, mm-hmm. and that renders a dog safe in our society, not a danger.
The dog takes its cues from you.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Let's talk with a couple of other listeners. Next we go to Charleston, line 4. Hi.
Hi, I have another licking question. Mm-hmm. My dog licks his tail, mm-hmm. and he doesn't do it when he's around members of the family. He does it when he's alone or and when everybody's gone or when he's in another room. Mm-hmm. I wondered if there's any advice as to what to do about that.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I guess I can hang up.
Sure.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
This really is, again, a symptom of a very common problem, and we deal with all of this in the book. Right. The caller clearly said when the dog is left alone and the family are missing. Now, if everybody just bears with me on my belief that the dog believes it is leader of the pack, if leadership comes with that, comes responsibility for the pack. Now, if a child goes missing in our society, everybody simply goes with the parents because how are they feeling left at home not knowing where their child is? Well, this is what happens to the domestic dog over and over every day, day after day. And the bigger the family, the worse it gets. And the stress, the agony in the head comes out in some way. And self-mutilation, which biting the tail, again, it kicks in the dog's natural endorphins, the chewing action. If you're doing something, it's better than doing nothing. Other dogs, just to manifest this, will actually destroy carpets, beds, furniture. They will chew around the doorway. There is a lot of destruction is caused by separation anxiety. So with this caller, the first thing I would recommend she do is to, as I've said before, address the problem of the dog's role in the house. Take charge of the four core elements, the food, the hunt, the separation, and the perceived danger in the quiet, confident way I show. Now, another thing she can do just to help that little guy along is when the dog is quite happy in the house, put on your coat and your shoes, and I call this gesture leaving. So without going, you see, another thing people often do is say, dog, I won't be long, I'm just going to go down to the market, you know. No, that's winding them up. I want that lady to just walk out of the house, ignoring the dog completely, walk down to the gate, turn and come back, and to repeat this and lengthen the times of it. Each time she leaves, she doesn't speak, and each time she comes back, she doesn't speak. And when the dog is fully relaxed, call the dog to you for plenty of affection. And by doing this, she's getting the dog to think before the dog can even become wound up to get distressed, she's back, she's fine, and she's not upset. She's not saying, I wasn't long, sorry, or bad dog, you destroyed the home, or whatever. There is no worry for the dog. And if you combine the way you treat the dog with this particular little bit of help with that symptom, then the whole thing will stop.
Hmm. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana, line 1. Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have missed part of your show, so if I'm repeating a question that you've already heard, I'm apologizing. I have a German Shepherd who's terribly afraid of thunderstorms.
Yeah.
And she would, if it's thundering and lightning, she will bark for 8 hours, particularly at night, but daytime too. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can do about that. And I will hang up and listen to you on the radio unless you say otherwise.
Right. Thank you very much for that call. Again, we have phone calls like this in our country around bonfire night. You will probably get it as problems around July the 4th because we set off fireworks. Now, again, if everybody can bear with me that the dog believes it is leader, what happens in this instance is that if when the dog becomes distressed, you cuddle it, you are actually showing the dog that you're praising that behavior, giving it some affection at that moment, which is wrong. The other thing is, if the dog, as I've said before, truly believes its leader, then who has it to turn to for comfort or even assurance when something it does not understand happens? By that I mean, when you change the mind of the dog as to who is leader, the dog can hear something it does unfamiliar, it can see something unfamiliar, and will immediately look to the owner, the leader, to see the reaction of that leader. And in our case, when a dog reacts to thunderstorms, then we get the owners to change the way they treat the dog, to show the dog that they trade places with it, so it's no longer responsible for them. And then when the thunder happens or the fireworks happen, then the owners just relax. They sit there. And the dog will listen to the noise, look at them. And it's almost like as they're watching, they sort of end up thinking, it doesn't bother you. Heck, it doesn't bother me either. I actually worked with a 14-year-old rescue dog. It was an old dog from a rescue shelter who was terrible with thunder. And I went to work with her on a Saturday lunchtime with just this process. And she had been so bad, she was around the back of the television wires, wrapping herself in there, trying to get away. And they phoned me the very next evening to say there had been thunderstorms on the Sunday, but they had done the process, and the dog was not bothered. It can be that quick. I'm not going to promise every dog will be that quick, because you're dealing with individual human beings and individual dogs. But what my point is, that it is will work if you do it properly. And again, in the book, I have put a section on fear of the unknown, noises, as I have with the anxiety, separation anxiety. It's all in there.
Mm. Let's talk about the walk.
Yeah.
Making it a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
This was just, it makes so much sense now that I think about it.
Yeah.
When you put the dog on the lead to go out the door, mm-hmm. you go through the door first.
Yeah. But
what?
Actually, the problem can start long before you even get to that stage.
Yeah.
People think about problems on the wall because a dog dragging you down the road. You know, they actually see that's the problem. Well, hey, what's a dog like when you put on your shoes? If the dog starts whining up and leaping around, yeah, I want that dog happy, but I don't want hysterics, thank you very much. And so I will cancel it. We won't go anywhere till I get the dog's attention calmly. So I can call it to me, come on, sweetheart. If when you get the leash out, the dog goes up in the air, you do nothing. You don't shout. You don't holler. You teach them consequences of actions. If you behave like that, we don't even go that far.
Mm.
Now, we are actually here putting the calf, as it were, before the horse, because if the dog does not know what you want when you ask it to stay with you, whether you ask it to stay at walk to heel or come close or whatever you want to do with it, if it does not already know by you teaching it what you want, it's not a mind reader. So I start with walking as a game we play at home. I make sure I've got plenty of time. I always allow an hour, then it takes 15 minutes. If I allow 15 minutes, it takes an hour. So what I do is I get the dog no leash, round the house, because that's where we all learn our manners, round the house, and around the garden, food reward at my side, invite the dog to come to heel. I call the dog's name clearly, say it's Molly, Molly, heel, show them where I want them to be. And we play this game. I'll walk slowly, I'll walk quickly, a little run, a little backwards, a little sideways, all the time. Good dog, praising the dog. It's a good, fun thing, and we all learn through fun as well. So when the dog has got that nailed, that when you say, come, sweetheart, heel, the dog will come to your side, got it. Then you can add the leash, because the leash is just a safety precaution. The dog already knows where you want it. Great. So when you come to the door, yes, you stepped through the door before, and then you walk out, and the dog is not pulling you because, one, the dog is not the leader because you've already asked the dog to give up that job to you, so it's not the leader's job to pull. And, two, you've taught it where heel is without any violence, without any negative work at all. It's all been done with positive. So I take charge of the hunt, the walk, right from the first thought of it, and I get that dog to want to cooperate with me.
Mm.
Yeah?
Hmm. How do you involve children in training?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. First thing I want is the children to have respect for the dog. A dog is not a toy. And, you know, if children, you know, I often have people say, oh, I want to get a dog for my children. I say, uh-uh, unless you want that dog, a child is going to have that toy one day and then move on to another. But if everybody wants a dog and the family are going to work together, then I like the children and the dog to learn respect for everything. For example, if you go into the sitting room I don't know about in most homes, but I should imagine if it's like mine, a sitting room is for sitting, relaxing, watching TV, listening to music, reading a book. So the children and the dog are not allowed to play in that room. That's fair enough. And if the dog starts to play in that room, you pop it on a leash and hold it, show it how to behave, and introduce it that way. The same we do with a child. No, we don't bring the football into the room, darling, because of my best china. You know, let's be real. Then we have to choose particular places to play. And if the child has got respect for the dog and the dog respects the child, then it's going to be introduced quite beautifully. I must tell you something very interesting. I met today a lady I hadn't seen for 2.5 years. When I met her, I was filming with CBS Television, and she had a very, very distressed dog. It was a rescue dog, and she was so wound up. And the cameras came with me, and we did the piece of film. I explained to the owners what I wanted them to do, this change of attitude to the dog. And within 2 days, I heard the dog was doing great, which was fantastic. I spoke to her today, and 6 weeks ago, she had a baby boy. And she said that Millie, the dog, loves to lay with that child, likes to be with that child, doesn't try to concern herself. She is so relaxed. And when the baby cries, Millie goes into the kitchen, finds Kim wherever she is, and sort of looks at her and says, hey, you're going to give this child some attention? And it is an absolute joy. They can be together, and they should be, but providing the child knows to respect the dog as well.
Mm-hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Dog trainer Jan Fennell, our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. A few minutes remaining in this portion of the program. Jan Fennell is the author of The Dog Listener, Learn How to Communicate with Your Dog for Willing Cooperation. The book is published by Quill, an imprint of HarperCollins. It features a foreword by the horse whisperer, Monty Roberts. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with your questions, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. About 10 minutes remaining in the program this afternoon. What's your advice for feeding? You mentioned food and how important it is. It's right at the top of the ladder.
Oh, that's right, because without food, you don't live. What I recommend for the quality of food, it should be a very natural diet. The modern-day complete foods have been carefully sought out for us, and that's fine. There are people who choose a natural diet for their dog. If your dog is healthy and fit and not overweight, then that is excellent. I personally feed our dogs twice a day, morning and evening, because, they are opportunist eaters. And so sometimes they go for big prey. I mean, I'm talking about the wild dog, But sometimes they just grab something small as it goes past, and that's an appetizer. So that, I find that a good way. It also gives you an opportunity to give them another signal. And this is what I call gesture eating. And I only invite people to do this for a couple of weeks while you're establishing a change in the rules. And that is, if you put a plate, a cracker or a biscuit or something you could eat, now, again, every member of the family should try and take part in this at some time, including small children. Then you pick up the dog's bowl and you mix their food. Now, you just leave their food to one side, then go to within inches of their food is your plate with a cracker on it. You then pick up your cracker, and without looking at the dog, you eat it. It's not about teasing the dog. And then when you finish your cracker, you put the food for the dog on the floor and walk away. If the dog walks away from the food, you take it straight up. And you don't offer that again until the next feeding time, which would be in the evening, so that happened in the morning. And what the dog sees by you doing that gesture is, as it looks at you, it knows there's the food, you are eating first. It thinks you're eating out of its bowl. It doesn't matter that you're not. The dog sees you eat first, and it gets what you leave. Wow, that's what happens with the leaders. They eat first, and the others eat second. Or third, or whatever. So another powerful signal. And I do use food reward to begin with when I'm working with a dog. In the same way you do with a child, when you're teaching a baby manners, we don't just say to them, say ta when somebody gives you something or thank you, and expect them to have that. We keep repeating it and repeating it. And then in the end, the child starts to instinctively say please or thank you. So again, it's a dripping tap. And be aware that if you're feeding them, I only give them small pieces of meat strip when I'm using this. Not the whole thing, just a little piece because you don't get your wages all in one go, you know? You don't get your annual wages in your wage packet. It's either weekly or monthly. So just a little bit. And be aware that whatever you're using to give them reward for working for you, to make sure you're not overfeeding them later on in the day.
Hmm. Let's talk with some more listeners. Next, we go to a caller in Philo on line one. Hi.
Hello. I would like to ask a question. I have a small dog that was shown before we got him, and I think he's been abused. He cowers every time that we reach down to pick him up. He always acts afraid. We have never done anything, you know, to hit him or anything. And I don't know how to reassure him and make him feel comfortable. We've had the dog approximately 5 years now, and I am at my wit's end to try to figure out anything that can make him feel more comfortable with us. And I will hang up and listen to your question.
Oh, okay. Now, this is so classic of the people that ring us. The care and the love for this dog is absolutely apparent, and the distress it calls the owner, because when you're going to do nothing but love the dog, as you reach out, the dog ducks away with fear. It hurts so much because you know you're not going to hurt the dog. Now, this is the good news. You can change this around by, first of all, as I say, get the dog to see you as leader. Forgive me. And then you never go to the dog. Never. To begin with, you just sit on the floor and let the dog start coming to you. Don't reach out. Give it an escape route, always. And as it comes over to you, you can be reading the magazine. And you can say, hi. Just be, hi, nice to see you. Forgive me. And then you keep the dog coming to you. If you go at the dog fears that. Never go to the dog.
Mm.
Remember what I said too, the leaders, the dogs, the subordinates go to the leader anyway. I actually had this with my other big teacher, which was Barmy, my little cat Russell. He was in a shelter. He'd been abused. He was grossly underweight. He'd had his mouth kicked. He was in a terrible state. And they said, he doesn't like people. I thought, are you surprised? And I took him home, and he sat under the table growling at us. Ah, I just left him alone. I just sort of say to him, oh, how you doing? Nothing. I gesture ate. I left him alone. Because the first thing he had to realize was he has nothing to fear. This is when being a human being is the worst thing for you, because we want to give them love and affection and reassure them, when what actually does work is to just be there, be solid, be the one that is strong. Let them see that in you. Call that dog to you, and when it comes for food reward, don't try and touch him. Call him to you, good boy, and then walk away. You leave him wanting more. And it took me 5 weeks to turn Barmy from a snarling, sad, shivering little dog to quite a happy little chappy. And I took him back to the shelter just to visit, and they couldn't believe it was the same dog. Yes, he'd put on the weight, but the other big thing was his attitude. It sounds awful, and I don't want that listener to think for 1 minute that I'm criticizing that, you know, them. It is about trying to not be human at this point, seeing it from the dog's eyes. If somebody comes at you, you back off.
Mm.
Yeah.
Especially if you've had that experience.
Exactly. But we do that anyway. You and I do. You know, if somebody comes at us, we're not comfortable with. So you just, I promise you that this person can change their relationship with their dog and stop the dog from fearing the hand. Because if you show the dog your leader, draw it to you, then it can and will be confident. I deal with that in the book as well. For obvious reasons, it's such a common problem. One other thing, may I just say that I am actually at the University of Evanston on the 14th of February.
Oh, okay.
I've got a lecture there, and if you like, I'll give you details. If anybody wants to ring in, then I can tell you, you know, how that's going to go. Is that all right?
That's fine. The University of Evanston? Uh-huh.
On the 14th at 6:30.
6:30, okay. And do you have a building there or a hall?
Yes, I'm actually going to be at the Northwestern University Hall.
Northwestern University Hall.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
All right, and that would be 6:30 Central Time, February 14th. In the meantime, coming up on this Monday, the 9th of February, You'll be in LaGrange at Borders.
Yes, my first time with you, and I'm really looking forward to it.
And then at Anderson's Books in Naperville, on Tuesday the 10th, and that's at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Jan, next time you're in the U.S., I hope you'll ring us up.
Well, it's been an absolute delight, and the other thing that's so wonderful for me is when I hear people talking, as I have, every person who's rung in today, you can hear the caring for their dog. You can hear the love they have. And I would like to say to them is, the most frustrating thing for a human being is not knowing why something happens. There's something worse, knowing why it's happening and not knowing what to do about it.
Mm.
Fortunately, I've eliminated both.
Mm.
I know why every single piece of behavior happens, and I know what to do about it.
Thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Jan Fennell has been our guest. She's the author of The Dog Training Guide, The Dog Listener, Learn How to Communicate with Your Dog for Willing Cooperation. She'll be in Evanston at Northwestern University on the 14th of February, 6:30 p.m. at the Northwestern University Hall. And then she's got events on Monday, the 9th of February at Borders Book in LaGrange, and on Tuesday, the 10th at Anderson's Books in Naperville. 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, settlement prices should be in now from the Chicago Board of Trade. And with those numbers, the highs, lows, and settlements, Todd Gleason.
You betcha. The highs, the lows, and the settlements. Quite a day at the Chicago Board of Trade, by the way. In the corn and the wheat pits, in the corn and the soybean pit, futures moving higher. And especially in the soy oil pit, where futures moved to, I think, 15-year highs or something like that, back to 1988. I know I took a quick look, and they moved up from a low back in 2001 to double their money on the price that they're paying for bean oil at this point. Let's begin at the wheat pit. At the Board of Trade, March futures 386, the high, the low at 376, a settlement price at 378 in the March wheat, down 2.5 cents. May futures 391 high, low at 383. Settlement at 386.5, down 0.5. July futures in the wheat pit, 383, the high, the low at 375.5, a settlement price 378.75, down 2.25. And September, 387, the high, the low at 379, settled 382, down 2.25. December futures for the wheat pit, 395, the high, the low at 387, a settlement at 388.5. They were down a nickel for the day. March corn, up 3.75 cents, a settlement price just a penny off 280 today at 279. The March had a high of 279.5, a low at 276.5. Once again, that March settled at 279, up 3.75. May futures, 285, the high, the low, 281.75, settled 284.5, up 4.25. In July corn, 287.5 high, low 284.5, settlement at 287, up 4.25. September futures, 282.5, the high, the low at 280, settlement price 281.25, up 3.25. And the December, this is your new crop, 279, the high, the low 276.75, the settlement price at 278.5, up 2.5 cents. March corn, 282, the high, the low 279.75, the March new crop corn, 282, settlement price up 2.5 cents, and the new crop July, 285, the high, the low 282.5, settle 283. They finished a half higher. Now, December, 2 years out on the crop for corn, 258, the high, the low, 256. That December 05 corn, 256, it settled down one for the day. The March oats, 155.5 high, low at 150, settled 151.25, down 3.5. And the May futures, 158.75 high, low at 154.5, and they settled 154.75, down 2.75. From the soy complex this afternoon, futures in the bean pit finished like this. The March contract, 844.5 high, low at 835, settlement at 840, up 7.75 for the day. May futures, 845 high, low at 834.5, settled 839.5, up 8 cents. And July, 826, the high, the low at 817, settled 820.25. They finished 6.25 higher. September futures, 13 cents higher, 729, the high, the low at 721. And a settlement price there at 726.5. Once again, they finished 13 higher in that September contract. November beans, 652, the high, the low at 643, settled 648.75, up 9.5. Jans were up 9.5 as well. A 650 high in settlement price. Their low is at 646. Once again, the January settling 650, up 9.5 cents for the 05 crop. March 05 beans, 652, the high, the low at 646, settlement at 651.75, up 9.75. March bean meal, 257.60, the high, the low at 254.40, and a settlement price at 256.80, up 4.50 for the day. The May futures, 257.40, the high, the low at 254, a settlement price at 256.50, up 570. Now the March oil. Now, we talked about this moving dramatically higher for the day and over time, but they did finish lower. 31.10 the high, the low at 30.45. Settled above 30 bucks at 30.66. They were down 11. March futures 30.96 high, low at 30.50. Settled 30.59. They were down 12 for the day. Now here's Celeste with the numbers from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
Thank you, Todd. And before we get to those numbers, let me tell our listeners this afternoon that University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign Chancellor Nancy Cantor has announced her resignation. Cantor has accepted the position of Chancellor and President of Syracuse University. She will leave the U of I in July. I'll have more on this in just a moment, following the prices from the Mercantile Exchange. Again, Nancy Cantor going to Syracuse University. Now let's take a look at what happened today on the Merc. March feeder cattle, 83.50 the high, 82.85 the low, 83.15 the settlement, that down 5. April, 85 even the high, 84.40 the low, 84.82 and a half the settlement, that down 15. May, 85.50 the high, 84.85 the low, 84.92 and a half the settlement, that down 60. August, 88.02 and a half, the high, 87.65 the low, 87.95 the settlement, that down 20. February live cattle, 75.75 the high, 75 even the low, 75.45 the settlement, that down 12 and a half. March, 74.05 the high, 73.70 the low, and settlement, that down 40. April, 73.25 the high, 72.20 the low, 73.10 the settlement, that up 22 and a half. June 70.30 the high, 69.60 the low, 70.05 the settlement, that up 25. February lean hog, 62.20 the high, 61.42 and a half the low, 62.02 and a half the settlement, that up 70. April 60.90 the high, 60 even the low, 60.85 the settlement, that up 37 and a half. May 61.30 the high, 60.85 the low, 61.05 the settlement, that down 2.5. June lean hog, 65.50 the high, 64.90 the low, 65.47 and a half the settlement, that up 27 and a half. February and March bellies finished limit up today. February, 93.30 the high, 92.15 the low, settling at today's high of 93.30, that up 300. March bellies, 94.02 and a half the high, 93.25 the low, 94.02 and a half the settlement, that up the limit. The Dow up 69 points at 10,564. The NASDAQ is up 38 at 2057, and the S&P 500 12 higher at 1140. Joining me in the studio this afternoon, AM 580 News Director Tom Rogers. Tom, tell us more about Nancy Cantor's decision to resign and go to Syracuse.
Well, it was actually announced not too long ago, both in a release from Syracuse as well as a letter that was sent to the campus community via email from Chancellor Nancy Cantor, announcing her decision to accept a position as Chancellor and President in Syracuse at Syracuse University, effective in July. The decision